It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022 returning MOI Global instructor Adam Crocker, founder and chief investment officer of Logbook Investments, a value fund with core positions based on insights from books. Logbook launched in 2016 and is seeded by his former employer. Prior to Logbook, Adam was a co-manager at Metropolitan Capital Advisors, a long-short equity fund founded in 1992. Before that, he was an analyst at Morgan Stanley Investment Management, conducting research on behalf of growth and value investment teams. Adam began his career in leveraged finance investment banking at JP Morgan. He is a 2005 graduate of the Value Investing Program at Columbia Business School and has an undergraduate degree in economics from Columbia University. Adam is also a CFA charter holder. Great to have you with us again this year, Adam. I look forward to your presentation and would like to turn it to you now. Please go ahead.
John, thank you so much for having me. Always glad to be here at the European Investment Summit, Investing Summit hosted by MOI Global. As in prior years, the title of the presentation is Invert, Always Invert. And you gave such a great introduction. There's not a lot we need to do in terms of talking about the fund, but as you mentioned, the fund is a concentrated value fund where I layer on insights from books to try and augment the fundamental research process. And I'll talk a little bit more about what that means in practice. But Logbook, the name, refers to the checklist-based principles of aviation. I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from having a checklist in aviation that apply to investing. Every name that goes into the fund goes through my own personal checklist that results in a document that is a major part of the diligence process. Journaling, reading, two big other parts of the process here at Logbook, and they are part of the reason why the fund is named what it is, in addition to my grandfather being a pilot. So getting into the title of the presentation, thinking about implied expectations, and I really view that as a tool, using the share price and the valuation of the company as a tool to say, what is the market saying about the future financial and strategic prospects of this business? And comparing that those implied expectations with what your research says about the future of the business. And when there's a significant disconnect, those are usually the opportunities for deeper research and potential investment. And that is what we will discuss today. And the name that I'm presenting is Ferguson PLC. Ferguson is a high quality distributor of plumbing and HVAC products. Macro fears have presented us with an attractive entry price, and the company, part of the potential reason for mispricing is the company is still misplaced in the European bucket for legacy reasons that we'll talk about throughout this presentation. So the thesis here, as I mentioned, it is a high quality distributor of products for plumbers and HVAC professionals. And so because of macroeconomic concerns, I believe, we're having an opportunity to buy this business at an attractive price. The company has changed dramatically over the last several years. Their business mix, their geographic mix, their balance sheet, and the company really bears little resemblance to the prior enterprise that it used to be. But that isn't really fully reflected in the share price. And so it's a business that had been a European and United States conglomerate type business. It is now completely focused on North America. 95% of their revenue is United States. The rest is Canada. There's an activist investor involved. It's a business that demonstrates structural underlying growth. And there are some areas of potential optionality. And when you combine that all together, I think there is a compelling investment opportunity here. And like I said, this is a business that is in the European bucket. It trades in London and now the United States. But it is primarily owned by European investors. And as I mentioned, there is no longer any European revenue from this business. So there's still a bit of a disconnect. And what they do is, this is a gross oversimplification of what they do, but think of it like kind of like almost like Home Depot, but for plumbers and contractors, and it's trading at a really trough historical multiple. So the next slide, slide six, what is their business model? What they really do is they bring order and knowledge to the fragmented market that is plumbing and HVAC distribution. On one side, you have 34,000 suppliers, and these are people that make pipes and fittings and faucets and air conditioners, you name it. And on the other side, you have a million customers who are professionals, plumbers, ventilation installers, and those sort of professionals. And Ferguson, with its infrastructure, provides a route to market for these products to get to the professional customers who in turn install them in people's houses and other infrastructure products. And we'll talk a lot about what that infrastructure entails. Not only do they have infrastructure, but they have service expertise and consulting expertise that is actually quite valuable to the professionals that they serve. So the next slide, slide seven, this is a visual representation of their branch network. Ferguson, as you can see, has a presence in pretty much most of the large population centers throughout the United States and in Canada. The local density is actually quite an important advantage. If you're a plumber, being closer to a Ferguson branch to get the supplies that you need is an attractive reason to use Ferguson over another competitor. Most of their competitors are private, independent, local players. And the scale that Ferguson possesses is a long-term advantage. Now, how are orders filled? When 50% of revenue is generated from products that are delivered from branches to job sites. So again, scale matters. The having local density, not having for Ferguson, not having to deliver as far versus their competitors to a job site is an advantage, and that provides operating advantages and operating financial leverage that peers do not enjoy. 20% is collected from branches, and that's plumbers, contractors going physically into the branch and picking up the supplies that they need. 16% are delivered on through Ferguson's infrastructure, their trucks, their flatbeds, from suppliers directly to the job site, and 12% is delivered from Ferguson distribution centers to directly to job sites. And as you can see, it's on the bottom. Most customers travel less than 20 miles, are able to reach a Ferguson branch in less than 20 miles. The next slide is really just showing the business mix and how the business mix has changed. It's about 56% residential, 44% non-residential, 60% RMI, which is repair, maintenance, and improvement, and 40% new construction. The circle graphs in the lower middle of this chart really just show the transformation of the business since the last financial crisis. Going into 2008, this business was much more skewed to new construction, and now it is primarily a repair, maintenance, and infrastructure business, which makes it more resilient, more predictable, and overall a better business than it had been in prior cycles. Slide nine, Ferguson's history. I'm not going to read every word on this slide, but just to give you a sense of where the company has come from and where it is today, because it is important context. The company was formed in 1953 by a trio of entrepreneurs in the Chesapeake region of the United States. It was an independent business, and they built it kind of branch by branch. They have actually an interesting model where they empowered managers, and to the point where many branches were named after the manager who ran it. So it was a very entrepreneurial spirit, ran that way for over 30 years until they sold to Wolseley. And Wolseley is a UK distributor, a similar business, but based in the UK. At the time, they had $142 million in revenue, and they just needed the capital to accelerate what was already a very successful business, distributing to and serving plumbers and HVAC contractors. They pretty much followed the same playbook their entire history. In 2008, the company kind of got caught offsides from a balance sheet and business mix perspective. Wolseley, the company was actually called Wolseley at that time, was over-leveraged and was in, as I mentioned, new construction. They were in many different geographies throughout Europe and just an unfocused business relative to the quality of the underlying main Ferguson growth engine. So they decided to focus more on Ferguson. They began divesting non-core assets, getting out of non-core countries, to the point where they changed their name from Ferguson, from Wolseley to Ferguson in 2017. In 2019, Trian emerged as a 6% holder of the shares. And they advocated for a lot of things which have taken place, including demerging the UK business. So that was, it was a minority portion of their revenue base. Now Wolseley is no longer part of Ferguson at all. And listing in the United States, and which has also happened to the point where there's a primary listing as of spring 2022. So this is all pretty recent. This next slide, slide 10, is just a visual representation of what I just discussed in the history slide. From a 2008 investor presentation, you could see Wolseley was involved in many countries. They had many brands. It was a largely European business. Pardon the crude X's and circles I did in my my rudimentary PowerPoint skills, but these businesses are no longer part of the Ferguson that we're talking about today. The North American business also exited a building supply business called Stock after the financial crisis. So it is a much more RMI-based business, a much higher quality business. And on the right side of this chart is a pie chart that really just shows the business mix. You can see over half of their revenues from blended branches, which is mostly the plumbing. Some of them are plumbing and HVAC branches combined, 16% waterworks, and the rest HVAC, industrial, and Canada. Waterworks being more heavy duty pipes, large scale infrastructure, and civic projects. But I included this pie chart because it makes more intuitive sense to me of how the business generates its revenue. The company actually now breaks down its revenue mix in a way that just isn't as, I spent a lot of time still not really understanding what they did. So I included this historically because it just made more sense to me. Hopefully it's helpful to you as well. The way on slide 11 is how they separate their business now through 9 key end market verticals. The real point here is the chart on the left that shows it's really a very, very fragmented market, and it's a very large market. So Ferguson is typically number one or number two in the businesses in the verticals that they operate in. But as you can see, many of them don't even have a scale competitor. I included the logos of their scale competition to the extent that they exist, but largely it's highly, highly fragmented markets, which is very conducive to their long-term roll-up strategy of buying, family businesses at the point where it makes sense for both parties. But their size relative to their peer group is a structural advantage for the reasons that I discussed before in terms of just having the capacity for infrastructure that really their peer group cannot match. Slide 12, this financial overview, I think in a lot of ways is the source of the opportunity here. These are all the same company, but if you pull up Ferguson on FactSet, and I assume Bloomberg also, you're going to see the green bars for their revenue, their historical revenue. That is the historical legacy Wolseley businesses included. It's a highly cyclical business. It's a lower margin business than the Ferguson that we are contemplating today. The Ferguson that we are contemplating today is there has always been the North American plumbing and HVAC subsidiary. And so, as you can see, that is a business that has grown faster. It's a higher margin business. It's more predictable. The peak to trough in the Great Recession was much milder. And so it's just a overall better business than the historical numbers that you'll pull up. If you had no context and were just screening or whatever the case may be for Ferguson, it looks like at first blush, a much worse business than it actually is. And I think that's a big part of the potential opportunity. Next slide, slide 13, the quality of the business. This is a high quality business, as I mentioned. It's because it's very critical to customer operations. Having fulfillment, service, advice are all very important to plumbers and contractors, and why scale matters. Scale is probably an overused term in investing as a source of competitive advantage, but here it is actually real. Scale enables better terms with your suppliers, better purchasing, the location density for logistics, moving heavy equipment from one place to another. Having that density reduces your per unit costs, and also career stability and advancement opportunities are very real advantages because of the service element that is required in this business. Having high quality, high trained, motivated staff is very important in the branches, and the type of people that they want to attract are also the type of people that want to see themselves as having a future in this company and being able to grow. And by having so many locations and there always being a new opportunity for management or being able to invest in, they have something called Ferguson University, being able to invest in continued career training and advancement. These are things that Ferguson can offer that an independent player really cannot. And to the point where I'm going totally off track here, but there's an interview that the CEO did where he was talking about, he came from his family business. I'm totally going off track, but his family business was purchased by Ferguson. And one of the things he said was that it was interesting because there's, in an independent business, you actually try and almost hoard information because it's almost like a tool for power in a way that you don't at Ferguson, because it enables advancement and future opportunity, because you're not like, there are other places that you can use your skills within the company. Anyway, back to getting back on track. The service offering, as I mentioned, very critical. And the gross margins are reflected in the quality of the business. They've been very steady throughout any economic climate, and they've been able to pass on cost inflation, input cost inflation. So the quality of the business is reflected in high returns on capital. It's also reflected in the fact that Ferguson fits pretty well in the matrix of importance to customer versus cost to customer. So lessons from branch visits. I did a bunch of visits to Ferguson branches and their competitor branches, and a lot of insights came from that, actually more than usual in from research trips. Because the company talks a lot about the service element of their business. They talk a lot about a lot of just intangible advantages that they have that sound almost hokey, but they're very believable if you spend a little bit of time in their branches. You see the service, you see plumbers talking, asking advice on specific products pretty much instantly. You see people walking in the door and being greeted by their first name. The staff is extremely knowledgeable. It's not uncommon for people to have 10, 20, 30 years of experience with Ferguson, and they're very open to discussing their experience. One of the quotes I added in here was from a conversation that I had with someone at a waterworks branch. And he said, it's not for everybody, but it's for everybody. And that meant, basically, if you are looking for a job where you kind of punch in, punch out, don't have to do too much, and you don't have to necessarily push yourself on a daily basis, Ferguson is probably not the place for you. But if you want a job where you're constantly learning, where there's opportunity for advancement, where you have opportunities to take initiative, use your head on a regular basis, it's a great place to work. So that does not what everybody is looking for. And if it's not what you're looking for, you probably want to work somewhere else. But if you want opportunity and a venue to have a 10, 20, 30 year career with a company, Ferguson is really the only place that offers that. Another thing that was taken, that became clear from actually visiting a branch, is the the depth of their infrastructure. This picture on the bottom of all these trucks is nobody else can match this sort of infrastructure in as an independent peer. And these trucks, as I mentioned, deliver from a Ferguson branch to the job site, from a distribution center to the job site, and being able to fulfill on a more regular, predictable basis than the peer group is a continued advantage that Ferguson enjoys. And I think it shows up in the numbers. The unit economics here, I tried to take a stab at, but the real takeaway from this slide is that if you look at about a $20,000 bathroom remodel, roughly speaking, generously speaking, about a third of those costs between faucets, plumbing, fixtures, and HVAC, about a third of those costs are products that Ferguson sells. The interesting thing about that is when you compare it to cabinets or countertops or a lot of the other verticals of cost, these are the elements that Ferguson sells are kind of hard to substitute out for a meaningfully cheaper alternative if that's what you're looking for. So it lends itself to a much more predictable revenue stream versus other areas of kind of HVAC and building, other areas of construction. Another takeaway from conversations from branch visits, this was a competitor visit, but they did note that any of these wholesalers sell about 5 to 10% cheaper than what you would buy at Home Depot. And then within their customer base, the largest accounts may receive anywhere from a 15 to 20% discount versus smallest account. And again, it's interesting. If you go to these branches, there's no prices. There's a barcode and everything is specific to the deal that each customer has with Ferguson, or it's the same at any of their competitors, except for Home Depot Supply. The balance sheet, slide 16, as you can see, this is just to show how different of a business this is versus when we were entering the last financial crisis. I don't know if we're entering one now or not, but you can see Wolseley, it wasn't even Ferguson at the time, but Wolseley had a lot more debt on its balance sheet and its leverage ratios were significantly higher today. Today, Ferguson seeks to run it 1 to 2 times net debt to EBITDA. It's run below that for the last decade. But overall, it's a very conservatively capitalized business, which I think puts it in good stead for any future economic environment that we might face. Slide 17, strong cash generation. It's generated over $16 billion of free cash flow in the last couple decades, which compares favorably to the total enterprise value of the company. It's also been very steady cash flow generator and again, provides just a very good ballast for and strategic optionality as they go forward. And how do they use that cash? Slide 18, they have four distinct priorities for free cash flow in order. First is investing in the business, by enhancing their advantage on infrastructure, continuing to build out distribution centers, new branches, and just continue to press that advantage that they have versus local competition. They also will sometimes use working capital and attractive payment terms to win business on a targeted basis. They pay a continuous dividend. They continue to use M&A as a tool to bolster growth, and they have a buyback. So these are all kind of probably sustainable uses that we should expect to go forward for free cash flow. They've been a consistent acquirer. As I mentioned, they are a roll-up. They buy on a regular basis local competitors as it makes sense for both sides. It looks like since 2008, 2009, that they've slowed the pace of acquisitions. That's really not true. They've just sold their non-core businesses. So on a net basis, it looks like maybe that the pace of acquisitions have slowed, but they continue at a steady clip. They have an internal M&A group. They basically know their markets. They know which competitors they would like to own someday, and they keep an open dialogue. It's basically a lot of these companies naturally look to sell because they tend to be family businesses, et cetera. And when the time comes, Ferguson wants to be the buyer of choice. how they've returned cash, as you can see, especially since the financial crisis, they paid a steady dividend. They've been a little more episodic on the buyback, but they paid a buyback in most, and they've done a buyback in most years. I think the real interesting part of this chart, and I think part of the source of optionality, part of the reason why this opportunity exists now, is the stock price. And as you can see in the financial crisis, shares declined over 90%. They had to do a rights offering, a large rights offering, and it was, you know, devastating to shareholders at the time. As people are currently concerned about, you know, macroeconomics, maybe they're looking at through the lens of like, well, is there 90% plus downside here? I guess anything's possible, but as I hopefully communicated earlier, this business is a dramatically different business than it had been 15 years ago. Tried to look at margins versus comps. As I mentioned, their true comps are independent private players, but there are other kind of adjacent distribution businesses that I just, to sanity check Ferguson's margins, tried to compare it to. As you can see, they're not over-earning. And Ferguson's margins, historical margins, are depressed. Again, because they were part of Wolseley and the historical numbers include long-term Wolseley Financial's inferior business to the Ferguson that we are looking at today. Trian, as I mentioned, is involved, the 6% holder. They got involved in May 2019. They put out a compelling presentation at the Sohn Conference in November of that year. Most of what they were advocating for, actually probably all of what they were advocating for, has happened. The Wolseley UK sale, the US listing, all done. Since then, new management has also been appointed. The CEO of Ashtead, the former CEO of Ashtead, is now the chairman. And Kevin Murphy is CEO. He has been with Ferguson for 20 plus years. And he had been the COO and CEO of the Ferguson USA business, which is Ferguson, the entire Ferguson of today. But basically, you had the opportunity, you know, Trian put out a very compelling pitch. And because of macro concerns, we have an opportunity to own Ferguson again at a more attractive multiple after all of the catalysts have unfolded. So I think it's an interesting setup. So a little bit about Kevin Murphy, the CEO. The most interesting thing about him is that, and as I, in my rambling off track a few slides back, he did an interview in November of this year. So I included the YouTube link to it. If you're interested in Ferguson, I encourage you to listen to it. But the interesting thing about him is that he joined the company in 1999 when Ferguson bought his family's business. His family had a pipe distributor in Ohio, and his dad was getting closer to retirement. And Ferguson asked them, you know, what are you guys thinking about? And they decided it was a decent time to sell. So they sold. He had no intention of staying with Ferguson for the long term. But, you know, the more he learned about the company, the more he liked it. He began advancing within the ranks and became COO and CEO of the Ferguson division, came up through the waterworks business, which is his family's historical business, and is now CEO. And I think it's very useful to have a CEO that viscerally understands what it's like to be on the other side of the table. And to that, for a company that is a big part of their strategy is integrating these sort of mom and pop local competitors. And so for him to have been in that seat puts Ferguson in good stead as they continue their long-term M&A strategy, in addition to running the core business, which he has done quite well in his time in the big chair. So now we're really violating every rule of, I guess, PowerPoint presentations with all this text, but I wanted to include this so you can go back and read it on your own time. But one of the things I like to do in my research process is news runs and look back as far as possible and see, you know, articles that have been written about the company. And a few interesting themes popped up in Ferguson. a few being that they're cheap, they're I should say frugal. They are just come up with basic ideas that are make sense in terms of, you know, loading trucks the night before. At the time, people weren't doing that to provide better service. The fact they sold to Wolseley, being a UK-based company, was because they had a distinct culture that they wanted to preserve. And Wolseley kind of let them run their business as they had and allocated capital to the business to help accelerate growth. But they didn't want to have a US-based owner that would maybe infringe upon the culture that they were so proud of that they had built over the prior 30 years before selling to Wolseley. Employee continuity, they've been talking about that and demonstrating that for many decades. And that was something that popped out. But the one that really, really struck out to me, that stuck out to me, was the anecdote on the far left of uncommon executive loyalty. Maybe others have seen this before. I have not. Charlie Banks, who was the CEO from 2001 to 2006, he was actually the first intern at Ferguson decades prior. But he, after retirement, he became a partner at Clayton, Dubilier & Rice, the private equity firm. And when CD&R bought Home Depot Supply, everyone just assumed, oh, perfect, Charlie Banks can run it because he ran the competitor, Ferguson. And he didn't have a non-compete, but he said, I'm not doing it. Most of my best friends work at Ferguson, and he still was extremely loyal to the company. I've never seen that, but I think it speaks a lot to the camaraderie and the culture at Ferguson, that it is about kind of more than just money. It's about relationships and all the long-term things that they talk about, but this was an anecdote where it was really demonstrated. And I found it very unique and a powerful endorsement of Ferguson's culture. So I mentioned in the beginning, a big part of the logbooks process is anytime an idea looks like it might be potential investment for the fund, I look as widely as possible for books that might help improve my understanding of the situation. And I'm not going to read all these quotes, but one book I found at the library was The Professional Remodeler's Manual, and it's kind of a guide to avoid pitfalls as a remodeler when you're bidding for business. And one of the themes that really came up that was very clear about in reading this book is that plumbing is way more complicated than people realize. And you can, as a contractor, if you don't know what you're doing, really get into financial trouble quickly. A lot of contractors don't, they don't start as plumbers. They start as carpenters, and they know something about plumbing, but they can bid for jobs that were at a certain price that were way more complex than they realized and get into financial trouble quickly. The advice that a company like Ferguson provides can help a contractor avoid those mistakes. And so the codes, there's a lot of complexity that were not obvious to me before I started researching this company. But we really came through first by reading this book, and then second by actually visiting branches. Another book that was useful was The Autobiography, basically, of Home Depot built from scratch. And this one, again, neither of these were like the reason to own Ferguson, but they provide very interesting context and validation for what the company is saying about itself. And it jives with my primary research. Built from scratch, the main theme was that service matters. And I think it's very interesting that a company like Home Depot and a company like Ferguson, both highly successful for long term, make a strong point of investing in their people and investing in the customer facing service staff. And I think it's a big reason for both companies' success. So it's always useful to take a quick step back and think, why do we have this opportunity? What are the risks? And why is Mr. Market giving us this opportunity? And I'd like to think of risks in two buckets, real risks and perceived risks. Real risks are those that if they materialize, probably lead to a permanent capital impairment. And perceived risks are oftentimes the reason that the market is presenting this opportunity, but maybe more transitory or just misplaced. And the real risks in this situation, I think, are the fact it's a roll-up. And you know, that comes with inherent risks. And if there were any financial improprieties or just any reason that they were going to be unable to continue acquiring and adding that 2 to 3% to their long-term growth, that's a that changes the thesis somewhat. If we are on the precipice of another 2008, again, this is probably not the business you want to own. I think it's way better positioned than it was the last time around, but it does have a cyclical element to it regardless. And then lastly, if some well-capitalized like Amazon or somebody decided that this is a business they just had to be in, you know, plumbing distribution, and they were willing to take the time and invest the capital and, you know, hire the thousands of people required to provide the service, that would also be a challenge for Ferguson. I obviously ascribe a low probability of that, but it's possible. And then the perceived risks that I think are really giving us the opportunity now, you know, we're worried about an economic slowdown. It's probably not good for this business, but I also think it's probably somewhat reflected in the current price. As I mentioned before, the drawdown during the last crisis, I don't think it applies because of the balance sheet today and because of the business mix today, but it is, you know, it's scary. And, you know, I don't have a particular edge that wasn't available in the Trian presentation, and that was a few years ago. So, you know, maybe that's a reason that people are tired of it, or if they've heard of the business, which anecdotally, a lot of people still are not that familiar with the story. But anyway, it wouldn't preclude me from investing at these levels. Financial objectives. We're now on slide 28. What does the company expect it can do? High single digit to low double digit revenue growth, a combination of the underlying market growing 3 to 5%, Ferguson outperforming the underlying market, which it has consistently done. And then a couple more percentage points from the bolt-on M&A strategy. The operating cash flow converts to net income converts to operating cash flow, and operating leverage drives, they expect long-term low to mid-teens enterprise value, low to mid-teens earnings per share growth. For this fiscal 23 year, they have a July 31st fiscal year, so their FY22 just ended. They're expecting kind of flat to low single digit revenue growth. Last year was very strong revenue growth due to inflation, and a slight backing up in the EBIT margin again, due to just normalization from inflation. But a long-term mid-teens earnings grower, I think, is pretty attractive for a company that trades at a single-digit enterprise value to EBIT. So historical valuation at current levels, as you can see, they trade at a almost all-time trough multiple, and I will beat this dead horse. It's a better business. It is an undeniably better business than it was historically. The North American plumbing and HVAC distribution is a better business than the European building supplies and distribution businesses that represented those historical multiples. And today the company trades at about 9.5 times enterprise value to EBIT. So the macro I have no insight on, but I think the market is discounting some macro deterioration from here. The next slide, peers valuation, slide 30. This is basically just to show you that they traded a pretty attractive multiple to peers, and they generate attractive returns relative to peers. The bottom couple lines of show the discount of their multiple relative to their historical trading. And what's interesting to me about that is that they are by far in the bigger discount column, and they're in line with their European peers, Howden and Travis Perkins. I think that is probably indicative of the misnomer of Ferguson as a European business. Again, they are a completely North American business at this point, and I would expect that discount to dissipate over the years as people, or hopefully not years, but over time as people start to appreciate that this is a purely North American business at this point. Industry multiples, slide 31. This is just to give a sense of the fact that Ferguson, again, trading below industry historical median, below their own historical median, and do not seem to be trading at any sort of rich multiple relative to their adjacent peer group. And slide 32, relevant transactions. There's, as I mentioned, most of the companies, their real peers are private, and we don't have financial information on them, but Home Depot Supply has traded hands several times over the last 15 years, and their multiples are pretty supportive of a low double-digit enterprise value to EBIT for Ferguson. The pictures are from a couple trips I did to various Home Depot Supply stores. They are interesting. They're massive. It's they sell the products that Ferguson sells, not in as deep SKUs, but they sell plumbing equipment, they sell HVAC equipment, they sell everything, literally everything you would need to build a house, including the machinery, is sold at a Home Depot Supply store. So it's a comparable business, but slightly different business, to the point where Home Depot people there told me, oh yeah, if we don't have it, we send them to Ferguson. So how to think about valuation, assuming that the management's 3% revenue growth for this year and the low end of their operating margins, and a discount to historical trading multiples gets you about 30% upside from where it's trading today. I think it's a pretty good skew bull bear scenario spread. But back to the title of the presentation, thinking about invert, always invert, and what is the market telling you relative to my understanding of this business, is that if we assume that the 14 times multiple that it's historically traded at is the right multiple, even though it's a better business that I think I've explained at this point, but just assume the 14 times multiple is the right multiple, you're implying margin declines to below 7%, which again is possible, but this is a sustainably higher margin business than the Wolseley conglomerate had been. So I think overall that is an attractive bet to make, where you see such a stark disconnect between what the market is implying about the future of the business relative to the research that was able to conduct on the business. Optionality, slide 34. This is not, I wouldn't say an optionality story, but there's a list here I just wanted to include of things that, you know, if you put on your thinking cap of could go right, if you wanted to really be positive. They have an own brands business to the extent that continues to grow. It's about 9% of revenue today. It's twice the profitability and twice the growth of the historical of their core business. And a whole host of other things that could go right that are not included in any kind of base case scenario that I would think of. But overall, Ferguson is a high quality, predictable growth business trading at a reasonable multiple on an absolute basis, and a really attractive multiple based on its historical trading and in the context of the dramatic business improvement that it has undergone since the last financial crisis. Performance is more predictable than it appears if you pull up FactSet historicals, and it has true benefits from scale, both tangible benefits and intangible benefits. As I mentioned, the tangible benefits are more consistent fulfillment, more convenient locations, ability to offer best pricing because of their best purchasing. And the intangible benefits, which also have a tangible element to them, is being able to attract higher quality employees due to more investment opportunities, more predictability under a larger company, that financial stability came up many times in conversations at stores. And it's a place where you are rewarded for performance. So Ferguson is a better company independent of Wolseley. And at this entry price, I think we have an opportunity to benefit. So I'm happy to answer any questions. And thank you for having me again. This picture is from a distribution center. As I mentioned, I went to a bunch of branches. This is their largest distribution center on the West Coast. Also a branch, but they were very, I didn't make an appointment or anything. I just showed up at the branch and started asking questions, and they were very welcoming and spoke the company line without me prompting them. So I really enjoyed learning about this business and happy to talk about it.
Great. Thank you so much, Adam. We don't have a lot of time, maybe just a couple of questions from me. In terms of capital allocation and the mix there going forward, what do you think we can expect in terms of you know, bolt-on acquisitions, return of capital, other types of reinvestments?
I think the future will likely look a lot like the past. Their near-term CapEx is a little bit inflated because they have basically regional distribution centers that they've been building out, and they expect to continue adding, I think, 2 to 3 a year for the next few years. But so that will remain the priority, investing in the business and kind of pressing that competitive advantage that they have. But after that, it's dividend, continuing to buy up local competitors, and then buybacks as the you know, valuation warrants.
If somebody would like to track how the thesis is playing out here over time, what would be the key data points to keep an eye on?
You know, I think the best way to track how the business is doing is to visit the business and their competitors. I was actually pleasantly surprised in the research trips that I did how welcoming people are in this industry. Not a lot of people. They cater to trades, so they don't really have people walking in their store like, "Hey, I want to learn about this business. Like, I just had some questions." So people tend to be pretty transparent about the nature of the business. And you can talk to competitors and you can talk to Ferguson, and they ideally will be saying the same thing over time. If for whatever reason, there was one of the interesting things that came up from a conversation at a competitor was that their branches operate completely independently. And so that makes them basically less flexible in ability. Their inventory is site specific, and their ability to serve customers is site specific, and accounts are site specific. Advantages like that Ferguson has, if for whatever reason over time, those were to be eroding, that would potentially be, you know, an impairment of the competitive advantage, you know, a narrowing of the moat, et cetera, that might cause me to reconsider. But in all the research I've done, and it shows up in the numbers, all these advantages appear to be growing, not shrinking. But it's something that you can, I think, track over time.
Okay, great. Well, I will leave it there. Would just encourage MOI Global members to feel free to follow up with their own thoughts or questions. Adam, thank you so much for joining us again this year and presenting this investment thesis to the MOI community. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, John. And yeah, please reach out if you want to discuss, you know, positively, negatively, or anything in between. I'm always happy to discuss the business.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.